I find joy in my life.
By reading quietly.
Through laughter. Through exercise.
In my hobby of baking.
With my family and friends.
In being in nature.
In running.
In investing in the relationships that bring my life meaning.
When I can put my toes in the sand and hear the crashing of the waves.
Welcome to Joy of Medicine On Call, where we explore the many paths physicians take to find joy in our practice of medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Yellowleaves, and I look forward to your engagement in this exciting program from the Sierra Sacramento Valley Medical Society. Okay, well, this is Dr. Peter Yellowleaves here. Welcome to the Sierra Sacramento Valley Medical Society Joy of Medicine On Call podcast. And today I'm interviewing Dr. John Chuck. Now, Dr. Chuck attended Lowell High School in San Francisco. He then crossed the bay to earn a degree in nutritional sciences at UC Berkeley before venturing down to UCLA for medical school, where he was able to experience a wide variety of training opportunities. His interest in comprehensive and continuous care led him to believe he should pursue a career in family practice, and thus he made the move back to Northern California to attend UC Davis School of Medicine for his residency. He's lived in Davis ever since, working as a family medicine physician with Kaiser Permanente. Now, John, I know that you've got a lot of medical people and healthcare professionals in your family. I wonder, what sort of influence did they have on you and your career?
Well, it's really interesting. My father was a minister at the same church in San Francisco's Chinatown for over 30 years. And then my mother was a burn unit nurse at St. Francis in San Francisco. They took all care of all the firemen and things. I have an older sister who was an ICU nurse in Fairfield, and then she got into management. But you know, it's interesting. Neither of my parents ever suggested anything to any of the four kids about college or careers. I don't know why, but you would think that as Asian American parents, they would have said, be a doctor, be an engineer, but they actually never said anything. And when I was in high school, my dream career was to be a sports writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. The sports section of the Chronicle was literally a mint green color. They called it the green. I thought, how great would it be to be the beat writer for the Giants or the Niners or something like that? But then I was taking an English class in my senior year, and I realized, oh my God, I'm not even the best writer in this high school class of 30 people. I'm pretty sure no one will pay me to be a professional sports writer. So then I started scrambling, right? And I thought, well, I like science. And I was high, even at that age, I was highly energized by being around people. And I thought, people, science, maybe I'll be a doctor. So I had a couple of uncles who were general internists. And I thought, you know, maybe I'll go for that. So that was the birth of my interest in medicine. It was a failed attempt to be a sports writer that led to my career.
Well, I'm very sorry you failed, but we're pleased that you actually did. So John, apart from being a practicing physician, you've got this really long-term interest in health promotion and IT innovation. And I know that you've leveraged technology over the course of your career with the aim of making healthcare more convenient and personal through services such as My Doctor Online, the online portal that you work on at Kaiser. I wonder, where have the influences for that come from?
Well, you know, it's interesting. While working here, I had the opportunity to help a company in Newport Beach launch this online marketing service. Oh, I was flying down to Southern California for a couple of days, a month and things, and it was a bunch of technology people and MD, MBAs and all this and that. And through that experience, I learned a lot more about technology and the web and how you can leverage the web to make good things happen. So back here at Kaiser Permanente, they were looking for people to help launch our online services. And, you know, we named it My Doctor Online. And I remember in the very early stages driving down to Oakland and looking at wireframe mock-ups of what the page would look like. There are all these interest groups about, you know, what do we want out of online services from Kaiser Permanente? So it was really, really fun, you know. And then, of course, we launched it. It's been a huge crowd pleaser for our patients, just like it is for other health systems. But just the ease of accessibility to medical information, email your doctor, get refills, look up your lab results, schedule appointments. I mean, those things never existed before, like when my uncles were practicing. It was just, you know, small practices, call the doctor's office, wait a long time, can't get an answer. But now, I mean, I think healthcare has done a fabulous job of leveraging technology to make the receiving healthcare so much easier and more convenient. I mean, you know, there are some potential downsides to technology, but you can really, if you do it right, it makes the care more convenient and more personal. So I just love working on that.
Well, I have to say you've been incredibly successful with that because Kaiser is just such a sort of world leader in the use of technology. I understand more than half of all doctor-patient interactions now take place online, you know, using messaging, the EMR, and telemedicine. How do you find working like that as a physician?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I tell pre-medical students I speak to, or medical students or residents who come through, I say, you know, seeing patients in the exam room is pretty much less than half of what I do every day. I mean, so much of what I do is through email and things like that. And then the other thing is, you know, at Kaiser Permanente, we have e-consults. So if I need to send a consult, I'm not sending paper. I'm just going online, you know, choosing the facility, the specialty, booking the appointment, sending a patient the link, or if I'm seeing a patient in the exam room, and I want to bring the voice and expertise of a specialist in the exam room, we have something called phone consult, where I just look on my phone, who's on call today for head and neck surgery? I call them. I say, hey, Bob, you know, I've got Mr. Johnson in the room with me right now, and this is my question, and what would you do? And it's just fabulous because at the point of service, they'll give me the information for the next step rather than, oh, make the patient wait several days, travel to another facility just to hear the specialist say that thing. So I just think that's powerful. And obviously, many health systems do the same thing. But it's just one solid example of how do real life, you know, physicians and health systems leverage pretty simple technology to just bring, you know, better care to the patients, you know, at a good cost. So it's been fabulous to be part of all this because, you know, obviously when I was training at UC Davis, at there and everywhere, it's all paper charts, it's long waits, it's volume 7 of 7 or seeing a patient and follow-up. I'm sorry, I don't have information about your visit in our ER yesterday. And now it's just all there. And maybe sometimes there's too much there, but better that than not enough information.
Well, I think that's amazing, and it's very impressive what Kaiser has managed, and you've done a great job leading in that area. So I understand also that, you know, your other big interest in terms of healthcare is in physician health and wellness, and that you've been overseeing a number of programs for at least 1,000 physicians in Kaiser in your region. I wonder, can you talk to me a little bit about that? I mean, it's difficult to get involved in that area, particularly with all of our backgrounds where we've all been trained to be tough. And, you know, we have to make a lot of big changes both personally and obviously systemically.
Right. Well, it's interesting. You know, I always tell young aspiring physicians who are looking for leadership opportunities, I say, you know, just say yes when somebody asks you to do something. So I sort of stumbled into physician health and wellness. I was the recruiter of hospitalists and internists and family doctors for Kaiser Permanente in this region for a while. Hired lots of doctors. And I was doing a lot of HR type work, mentoring, performance evaluations, looking at physicians and their wellness. And my old physician in chief, Jack Rosanzi, called me and said, hey, John, might you be interested in being the chief of physician health and wellness for the North Valley? And I don't know, we maybe had about 800 or 900 physicians. We have 1,300 now in this part of Kaiser Permanente. And so I took that on, I don't know, 10 or 15 years ago. And, you know, I head up our local physician health and wellness committee. We have about 25 people. We meet once a month. And we just generate a broad menu of health and wellness and resilience programs that we think will meet our, you know, physicians who are in all walks of life, all different interests, sort of meet them, you know, where they are in terms of engaging in programs that help them be more healthy and well. And then, you know, the programs have expanded during my tenure. I now have a co-chair of physician health and wellness, Diane Chan's a fabulous pediatrician based in Roseville. And then, about 7 or 8 years ago, they asked me to be the regional chairperson for the physician health and wellness leaders group. So I lead quarterly meetings down in Oakland, and we have physician health and wellness leaders from all of our medical centers out in Northern California. And then I also have some regionally based physician health and wellness leaders. We have an associate executive director who oversees wellness. We have a regional director of wellness in operations, because my dream was always not that we just offer resilience programs, but how do you weave considerations of wellness into your day-to-day clinical operations? Because, you know, one of my mottos was always that you can't insert wellness programs in arrears of operations decisions that set you you up for burnout and failure. So we're tackling that. So Amon Sethi is our director of wellness in operations. We have Ray Ozer, who is a PhD, brilliant woman. And so we're working together. You know, we're learning a lot from other groups. Do we learn from you at UC Davis? We go to a lot of national and international conferences. One of the great things about physician health and wellness is that it is a specialty area where everybody freely shares whatever they have and say, I got this, you can have it, can I steal your thing? It's probably how science used to be 40 years ago. People would, you know, instead of hoarding all their ideas, that's what I love about physician health and wellness. Everybody's so generous with what they have.
So what do you think about the overlap between technology and health and wellness? Because as we both know, you know, the EMR frequently gets blamed for burnout. I have a different view on that, and I know that you do too, and I'm interested to know what that is.
Well, yeah, you know, Peter, at UC Davis, I like it, Kaiser Permanente. Rarely, I mean, maybe for 30 seconds every 6 months, the EMR goes out. And I just feel paralyzed. I rely on it so much for everything. And like I said earlier, I rely on technology to personalize care, because when I can access all, when I can review the chart before I go in the room, when I can remind myself of the last social thing we talked about and sort of greet the patient by saying, hey, how did Johnny do in that baseball tournament? That makes it highly personal. And you know, when I can be watching TV at night, answering patient emails, that's a joy for me. It's no work at all. But if I can use technology to be at home answering emails instead of buried at the office till 10 at night every night, I think this is a lovely thing. Now the downside is physicians sort of feel like, wow, you know, charting takes a long time. There are a lot of inbox results and that. But for instance, for charting, you know, if you get coached on how to use the EMR, you have templates, you have dot phrases, you don't have to retype everything. You know, if you have people coach you on how to process large numbers of lab values, if you have electronic e-consult systems that let you quickly move patients through, I mean, you know, things are better, right? So it's a two-edged sword. Like, that the EMR and the electronic inbox, yes, it can potentially create a much bigger workload. But if you're coached on how to use it and leverage it to provide, you know, high tech, high touch, personalized care, then it's a good thing. I could never work without the EMR. It's just too good. But that being said, I think it's like being an F-18 fighter pilot. When you first start using it, it could be very imposing. And also, there are many ways to misuse it that could create great inefficiency. So I think one of the answers to the whole issue of the EMR is make sure that physicians who are using it are being coached by fellow clinicians who are especially adept at using it. I think that's the key to making EMR work for doctors.
And I guess that's actually very logical, isn't it? It's a very big, complicated piece of software, and not much more than that in some respects. And we all need to know how to use it really well. So John, you mentioned that you tend to occasionally answer emails on your couch with your kids in the evening. How do you find balance in your life, and how do you get away from the EMR?
Well, interesting. I always tell people that I had some issues with balance when the kids were at home and, you know, you're trying to go to a lacrosse game and do work. I've been an empty nester for quite a while, so really my life is quite easy. But I continue to work on these things because many of my colleagues, different phases of their life, different issues and stuff. But in terms of balance, you know, one talk I give to doctors is called 10 Habits of Resilient Physicians. And I try and focus on those lifestyle habits that give me balance. And for me, balance is not like just getting out of the office on time because I have a horrible life there and I get home and I find all joy and meaning and balance there. For me, it's sort of like weaving balance into my daily life. So one of the most important things that I teach others and I try and do myself is you will have joy and meaning. You'll have balance if you're leading what we call a values congruent life, right? Like, what do you value in life? What's your mission statement for your life? And then are you thinking and doing those things day to day? If you are, almost regardless of your workload, you're going to have balance and have joy and meaning. So for me, growing up in my household, you know, minister, father, burn unit, nurse, wife, I learned that my goal in life is to love God, love people. right? I love God, but how do I do that in a concrete way? Well, I do it as a physician. So I try and love God, love people at work and at home and through my church and in the community. And so that's a values congruent life for me. The other thing I learned from the great Bob Emmons at UC Davis is be grateful. You know, when you're grateful for things, it makes you a more generous person. You're liberated to see the good things in other people. You're not always clamoring for credit for yourself. So, you know, Bob showed that if you do daily gratitude journaling, better health outcomes, better mood scores, and people like you more. Well, why not do that? Well, so instead of waking up every day and saying, woe is me, I'm tired, my inbox is too big, what about waking up and saying, wow is me, I woke up, I have a family, I have a home, I have meaningful work and the strength to do it. So being grateful. Eating healthy, you know, I'm a flexitarian. Now, of course, the great Rajiv Mosqueda is a vegan, but a lot of us can't sustain that. And it's really hard for a Chinese American to be a vegan, okay? I mean, so anyway, my wife and I, so tofu, you know, meatless Monday, tofu Tuesday, chicken stir fry Wednesday, okay? And if eating chicken once a week makes me die 6 months earlier, I don't care, okay? Because eating food is not just about nutrition, it's about enjoyment with family and friends too. So eat healthy. And then I really believe, you know, in terms of balance, I really believe in investing in meaningful relationships, like with my patients, with my colleagues, with my family, with my friends. For me, that's a great source of balance in my life and stuff. And then you have to have a few passion projects, right? So I've tried golf. I'm horrible at golf. I'm pretty sure that can't be my passion to work. So I'm trying to fish a little bit, and that's really fun for me right now. I always try and have one little hobby I'm working on where I'm glad to wake up at 5 a.m. to do it. So it used to be golf, and I realized after a while, I'm no good at this. Now it's fishing. And then after I realized that's fruitless because it's not called catching. It's called fishing, right? Usually I go out and I get nothing. But anyway, but I'm always trying to have some sort of passion project that's fun for me. So that helps. That helps me have balance.
That's really interesting. And I'm fascinated by the fact that you've used the term meaning several times just in the last few minutes. You know, what do you think? We're very fortunate to be physicians to have such a meaningful role in our world. I mean, how do you promote, you know, the importance of meaning to other physicians?
Well, it's fabulous. I was a wellness leader for a long time without really having a clear understanding of what meaning was, but that was all cleared up for me when I attended a Rachel Remen 2.5-day seminar in Yellow Springs, Ohio a couple years ago, Yellow Springs, Ohio being the home of the great Dave Chappelle. In any event, so there are about 50 physicians and nurses from throughout the country all at the feet of Rachel Remen for 2.5 days, and I was a very eager beaver, and I swear, I think in the first 10 minutes of the course, I raised my hand and I said, Dr. Remen, what is meaning? And she was very polite but quite dismissive. She said something along the lines of, oh, you know, young little grasshopper, you know, be patient. You know, I'll tell you later. But anyway, on the last half day of the 2.5 days, she got up and she said, it was just chilling. It was beautiful. She said, meaning is the deep satisfaction of knowing that your existence matters and that what you do in this world has a positive effect on those around you, your community, and if you're lucky, the world, right? Is that fabulous? Is that a great definition of meaning? And the thing that Dr. Remen would say is, it's not that doctors and nurses don't have meaning. They have meaning in spades, but that meaning is shrouded by the busyness of our lives and the emotional exhaustion, the depersonalization, or the feelings of low self-esteem, which sometimes, you know, come with a busy clinical life, right? And people hanging on to that first half of life, armor up and be perfect. You know, people, they need to shift in that Richard Rohr second half of life where you give up that relentless pursuit of perfection and you start searching to work with other people for a cause greater than yourself. And then you realize this is such hard work. You make a total commitment to mutual vulnerability, right? And then you just always, 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 always care about your colleagues because, you know, nobody can really support a physician or a nurse like a fellow physician or nurse. I mean, they do the work with you. They have the 1,000 paper cuts just like you. They get the P2 ruling from the QA committee. They get the R. I mean, these things happen in a long career, right? And so many physicians suffer in silence thinking that they're all alone in their suffering and their imperfection, when in reality they're swimming in a pond of other physicians really enduring all the same indignities, right? So we really need to rely on one another. And we really need to destigmatize mental health services. Pretty much all clinicians should be seeing counselors. Like, I see a counselor. Marisa Pierce is a marriage and family therapist. I see her during paid work time, sick leave time, on a quarterly basis. She's a fabulous wellness ally for me. And we need, you know, I was giving a talk the other day to a group of healthcare people, and I always show a picture of me receiving counseling from Marisa Pierce. But I'm always fishing for somebody in the audience to get up and say, I do too. Well, it finally happened last Friday. Practitioner got up and said, I just want to say in front of all of you that, you know, I had a traumatic event 5 years ago. I have PTSD, and I've been in counseling that's allowed me to stay at work and have joy and meaning. And then I said, everybody get up and applaud this woman. So we all did.
That's great.
There's a little pause. Yeah. And then a woman two over from her stood up and said, I just want to say the same. I had a physical accident 2 years ago. I'm still out on disability, and I've been, you know, pursuing counseling. It's really helped to sustain me during the so I'm trying to start a tsunami of, like, vulnerability and, you know, and things. Because how sad is it that so many healers are out there hurting, thinking, I don't have permission to seek counseling. It makes me unworthy. They'll think I'm not, I can't be part of this team if they know I'm depressed. No. We're all in the same boat. So it's a shared pain, shared vulnerability. But you know all these things because you're a psychiatrist. So I'm right. Preaching to the choir here.
Well, you're preaching to the choir, but there's lots of other people listening. So it's a big choir. So it's really good to hear. So I guess, just before we get on to the last sort of few minutes of this session, I'm interested to know, I mean, how do you actually intervene at a personal level if you see a colleague who really isn't doing so well?
Yeah, you know, as healthcare providers, we have this distinct advantage. We have pretty good antennas, right?
Right.
You know, for nuanced things and behavior and stuff. So for me, what I do is, if I notice that in somebody, I just try and carve out some time to be with them. And if there's somebody who's relatively resistant to outreach, you know, you sort of dip your toe in the pond. Hey, I want to go out for lunch today or whatever. You just start pecking around and stuff. Others, you can just flat out say, hey, are you doing okay? Can we have lunch together, or can I give you a call tonight, or let's go have a beer or something like that? But I do think that it's incumbent upon us, if we notice just kind of unusual behavior or somebody's sort of down for a long period of time, just say, hey, what's going on? You know, I'd love to hear the story of what's going on in your life. Just be caring, be curious, and then when they tell you the story, just accept it for what it is. And stop being a clinician. Stop being so judgmental. Stop questioning whether it's valid. Stop comparing it to your own story. Stop thinking of what you're going to say about your life. Just listen to their story. Oh, my God. I think so many people are yearning for somebody to just quietly listen to their story. That alone can be therapeutic, right?
Stories are so valuable.
Well, you know, I'm retiring relatively soon, and I thought, one thing I might want to do is just start this service. It'd be called Listening and Encouragement Services. I'm not going to fix anything for you. I'm just going to listen to your story without judgment and just leave you with a little bit of hope, because people are just dying for that, because we, in a way, the high-tech, disconnected, fast-paced society, and it's hard. I mean, it's, you know, everybody looks good on social media. You know, but there are tons of people who have looked good on social media, post a picture, and then an hour later they jump off the top of a garage complex, right? This happens, right? Mm. So, and once again, you know, you understand that as a psychiatrist, but we really have our antennas up for our colleagues' pain, because everybody hurts. So if we just set up that expectation that everybody does, and that we take the time to notice things in our colleagues, and then invite them to share their story, they may decline. Right. But at least you've invited them to tell the story. And then, of course, every system, including yours and ours, you know, we have professionals who can help people who are more than just sad. Right. So. Mm.
OK, well, look, that's a very, very great response. I really appreciate what you're saying. So let's just move on now. I know you have a lot of passions yourself. One of your passions is a serotonin surge charities that you co-founded many years ago. Can you just tell me a little bit about that, and what impact has this sort of volunteering had on you throughout your career?
Okay, so I grew up in San Francisco, like I said. I got the San Francisco Chronicle delivered to my house here in Davis for a long time. And I was reading a front page article about 21 years ago about this prominent national nonprofit that had a 40 or 50% overhead. And it's a very good nonprofit. They do really good work. And I just read that and I thought to myself, I wonder if I, who have a great job and I don't need pay for this, what if I started a nonprofit that was all volunteer? I just found other people who had jobs and stuff. And what if our only goal was to make people feel great about improving the quality of life in our communities? It's a pretty broad goal, right? I mean, I didn't have a name for it, but, you know, I'm in primary care and I treat a lot of depression. So, and, you know, as you know, the medicines like Prozac, they increase serotonin. So at 4 a.m, I woke up one day and I said, what about calling it Serotonin Surge Charities? It's got a little alliteration. You know, we're going to create events and raise awareness that make people feel great, not obliged to, but feel great about working together for the greater good. So we sort of launched it, and we found some great causes like safety net medical care, breast cancer research scholarships. And then we just start putting on fun events. Like we did a golf tournament for 20 years and for 13 years because my wife is really good at event planning. We did this rocking great food, wine, and fashion show fundraiser. You know, and then some college scholarships. But in 20 years with an all-volunteer group, thanks to great support from corporate sponsors, volunteers, donors, we've given away $4.5 million to these causes, and it's brought great joy to me. And you know, one of the things is, you know, money's one thing, but the better thing about Serotonin Surge Charities has been 20 years of giving people the opportunity to work with others for a cause greater than themselves. That has brought me the greatest joy of all. It's not the absolute amount of money we give or whatever. It's just giving people the opportunity to collaborate with other people to do good things. And that brings me joy. And then the other not-so-secret is that when you work at a nonprofit for a good cause, only nice people volunteer to help you, right? There are no jerks at a nonprofit working for safety net clinics. Only nice people show up. It's almost like cherry picking, right? It's just my easy way of meeting all the nicest people in the greater Sacramento region. So yeah, it's brought me great joy, and hopefully it's brought joy and meaning to the people who've helped us out over time. So
Well, hopefully all the nice people listening to this will join you, and you'll have even more people working with you, John. That's fantastic.
But the most important thing I have to say, and one of the favorite things we've supported, is the Spirit Program at the Medical Society, because the Medical Society rocks. The local Medical Society runs the state's best all-inclusive, comprehensive physician health and wellness program, and they're just killing it. I mean, I brag about them to all the groups I speak to. Like, they do a fabulous, fabulous job because they really listen to the doctors in the community about what the points of pain are, and everything they do is collaborative and engaging, right? I mean, all these small groups, the large groups, the Wellness Summit, these are things that just scream, we actually listen to you, and we believe in connection and collaboration. So anyway, the Spirit Program is a subset of the Local Medical Society, and they work to solicit, you know, physicians to volunteer to serve the underserved. So that's one of the things we're super proud to support with our fundraising over 20 years, is the Spirit Program and the Medical Society. So big shout out to them.
Okay, well, look, that's wonderful. So, John, I really appreciate all your passion and your interest and the amount of work you've done for the community over many years. I'm going to finish off now with just a quick series of lightning round questions, just to give listeners some ideas about what you do in terms of creating your own mindful lifestyle. So a series of quick questions. Can you reflect on something that brought you joy in the last week?
This past week, yesterday, I had the great pleasure of speaking to my colleagues at Kaiser and San Leandro and the Fremont Hospitals about a new talk I wrote called The Fall and Rise of the American Physician. I've wanted to give this talk for a while, but I finally did it. And the fall, of course, being due to all the things we know about, but the rise being due to the things we just talked about also, joining with others for the greater good, being mutually vulnerable, and always, 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 always caring for one another. So that brought me great joy this week.
Okay. So what is the best advice you ever received?
Best advice I've ever received? All the lessons I learned in church growing up, with the greatest being, love God, love people.
What is a book you can recommend that helped you find joy?
a book. Two great books. But I'll just say one: The Purpose Driven Life by Rick Warren. Our whole church read that years ago. But you only have to read the first page of the first chapter, or I think in the second paragraph it says something like, "Your life is not about you. It's about loving God and serving other people." Because so many of our woes are about, "Oh, woe is me. I'm unhappy." Well, that's not what your life is about. Your life is about loving God and loving other people. And if you do that, you'll have less woes and more joy.
Okay. Who is someone you admire?
Somebody I admire. I admire a lot of people. I think because I'm a family physician who does the work, I really admire fellow family physicians because I do what they do. And there's one in particular. He was one of my residents. I taught him. His name's Rick Fatankal. He's the assistant physician in chief at our Sacramento Medical Center. And what do I like about Rick? Many things, but he's the definition of smart, benevolent, and gritty. Like if we just had 1,000 Rick Fatankals in the state of California, everything would be fixed. Like everything would be fixed in terms of leadership, clinical care, and all that. Rick Fatankal.
Okay.
I admire him very much.
What are you most grateful for?
Grateful to be alive to do this interview. My dad always woke up and said, "I am grateful for meaningful work and the strength to do it." And I tell myself that every day. I'm grateful for meaningful work because I have this great opportunity with Kaiser Permanente. And for one more day, I've been blessed with the strength to do it. I don't even count on tomorrow. I don't even know if tomorrow will come for me. But this one day, I've been blessed with this one day, and I'm going to make the most of it.
Okay. And how do you take time for yourself?
Oh, that's a good question. My go-to thing for me is I go on walks and I listen to the Dave Matthews Band. I love the Dave Matthews Band. And if I can make people feel half as good as the Dave Matthews Band makes me feel, I would have achieved my purpose in life.
So you may have already answered my last question, which is, what is a step listeners can take in the next 24 hours to find joy?
Oh, is the answer supposed to be listen to Dave Matthews Band? Okay, what can listeners do to find joy? Okay, I heard Doug Abrams speak at Mondavi recently. He co-wrote the Book of Joy with the Dalai Lama and Bishop Desmond Tutu. And he says, okay, this is from Doug Abrams. If the listeners want to have joy, they should stop thinking about themselves and instead commit to bringing joy to somebody else. If they bring joy to somebody, Doug Abrams says, that is the greatest joy, is to bring joy to somebody else, regardless of whether you already have joy. And I think that's one way that people in a funk can get out of the funk. Just you know, don't think mostly about yourself. Just think about others and love others. Do something good for them. That will make you feel great.
Okay, John. Well, look, I think our time is up. I really appreciate everything you've done. Fascinating interview and a quick walk through your life and your passions and your interests. And really appreciate everything you do at Kaiser and for the community.
Well, and thank you for working with me at the Medical Society, but also being the chief wellness officer at the UC I love most, UC Davis, because UC Davis is the place that best combines excellence and kindness. I want the Chancellor Gary May to adopt that as the motto for UC Davis, because I've been to 3 UC campuses in my life, and they've all been excellent, but UC Davis is the most kind, and you're part of that, so keep it up.
Well, thank you very much indeed, John. Much appreciated.
Let's begin our 5-minute yoga stretch. First, find a position that you're comfortable in, standing, with your legs hip-width apart, arms by your side. Take a deep breath. Then elevate both arms so that they're facing straight ahead. Both arms should be extended. Then gently rotate at the wrist, rotating both hands inwards. Feel the tension relax. And then reverse that and rotate both hands outwards. Then keep the right arm extended. Take the left hand. Put your fingers of the left hand around the fingers of the right hand and pull it gently backwards as you lengthen and stretch your right forearm. Breathe into that stretch. Then reverse it by extending your left arm straight out, taking the fingers of your right hand, putting it over the fingers of your left hand, and gently drawing them back as you stretch your left forearm. Go ahead and bring both arms down to your side. Bring your arms behind you, your hands apart the width of a beach ball. Just imagine you're squeezing on a beach ball behind your back, keeping your spine straight. This stretches the chest or pectoralis muscles. Just take some deep breaths. If you like, you can clasp your hands behind your back, gazing forward and at the corner between the ceiling and the wall in front of you. Breathe into the stretch. Gently release your arms and bring them to your side. Now step back with your left foot. Your right foot should be pointed straight ahead, your left foot at a 45 degree angle. Gentle bend on the right knee. Bring your hands to your hips. Gently square it with the front. This is the Warrior One pose in yoga. Gently feel the stretch in your psoas muscle. Breathe into it. Go ahead and drop your arms to your side. Bring your left leg back forward. Your legs are now next to each other. We're going to reverse this and drop the right foot back. This time the left foot is pointing ahead and the right foot is pointing at a 45 degree angle. Slight bend on the left knee, bringing our hands to our hips, gently squaring that with the front. Once again, feeling a stretch on the psoas muscle. Feeling it relax. Breathing into it. Gently dropping our arms to our sides, stepping forward with the right foot. Look for a table around you or a chair, and then gently position yourself behind that. Reach out and hold the edge of the table or the top of the chair with both hands, and then gently walk backwards as you try to form a 90 degree angle between your back and your legs, bending at the hip, keeping a nice bend on both knees to protect our backs, gently pushing backwards with your sacrum or your lower back as you feel the traction. This is the chair version of downward facing dog in yoga. Feel yourself relax, ensuring that both your knees are slightly bent. Breathe into it. Gently walk back up towards the table. Bring your arms to your side. This concludes our stretch. Thank you. Please be sure to visit our website at joyofmedicine.org, where we have many more materials on wellness.